Flooding is becoming a worsening problem for communities around the world. Just over the past year, there have been destructive floods on every inhabited continent, with loss of life and destruction of infrastructure and property. Meteorologists say that extreme rainfall events are becoming more severe, more sudden, and more frequent because of a simple law of physics. Warmer air holds more moisture, and global temperatures are rising. So, what can be done? In this episode, we take a closer look at how communities and industry are developing and deploying smart solutions that can help avoid and reduce the impact of flooding. First off, we're joined by Anna Åkesson, Group Environmental Manager for Skanska. Anna, welcome to Shaping Sustainable Places.
Thank you, John. Really nice to be here.
Now, Skanska has been working for decades with helping protect communities from catastrophic weather and has developed some innovative solutions to counteract flooding. I've heard that there were some good examples from Poland, which, of course, was hit hard by flooding this summer. Could you tell us some more about them?
Yeah. And those are actually, we've been working for quite a while in Poland with some projects where we have rivers and also close to the ocean. Rivers that are flooded because of heavy rains and, of course, the sea level rise. And I think what we're doing is very much about making sure that the rivers will be able to stop being flooded and that sea level rise will not go into the rivers. So what we have done is that we've built flood barriers close to the rivers to make sure that the level in those rivers can actually rise without flooding the municipalities. And we've also created system with gates that actually close and open automatically dependent on level rise in the rivers. So if the sea level rises high, then those gates close to not allow the sea to go into the rivers. And then if it's been raining heavy, it's the other way around. The gates open so that the river water can actually come out. So it's quite clever solutions on problems that has been there for a very long time, but now are intensifying.
Mm. I think when I was in Krakow, I saw that there's actually a channel that can lead water away from the main river and that can open
exactly.
And close.
Yeah, there are lots of different solutions that we've been working with. This also has a lot of do of having floodplains where we can allow the water to go out and sit, acting like a buffer when we have heavy rains to not overload the city systems and so on. So it's quite intricate and complicated, but really nice system that is hopefully working very well.
And there's such amazing pieces of engineering and so on as well when you see these enormous floodgates.
It is. It's really impressive.
Mm. A little bit closer to home for me anyway here in Stockholm, Skanska has also been rebuilding Slussen, which is the very large connection point between the very large freshwater lake inland from Stockholm and the archipelago that opens out into the Baltic Sea. Can you talk us a little bit about what we've been doing there at Slussen to help mitigate against flooding?
Yeah, this is a really interesting and large project, and there are so many reasons for us doing it and for the municipality and the city to have it done. But I think one of the really important things is what you just mentioned about the sea water or the sea outside of the Stockholm city with bracket water. And then we have the Mälaren, the lake with the drinking water in. And if we would have seawater pouring into the Mälaren, we would actually destroy the drinking water. And that would be a really bad thing. So one of the things that Slussen is doing and the thing that we are building is something called spillway gates, like hatches that actually open and close automatically depending on what level of water it is that is needed to be released. Either it's Mälaren that needs to have water poured out of it, or it's making sure that the seawater doesn't go into Mälaren. And those hatches or spillway gates, they are really cleverly constructed in the way that we also know that in about 50 years we're going to have a higher sea level, so they're already prepared to put on some extra gates and raise them up so that they will work even in 100 years to make sure that water isn't automatically overrunning into the city.
Mm. I think we've done something like that as well in New York, going across to the other side of the Atlantic. There's been quite a bit of work on resilience in New York and around Manhattan.
Absolutely. We have the East Midtown Waterfront Esplanade and the East River Greenway, where we've done more or less the same thing. We raise the quaysides, and we also make sure that we have, what you should say, like a buffer out on the seaside to make sure that when sea level rise, there will be something that catches the water before it goes into the city. And that way we can, in a clever way, make sure that we have both added a biodiversity and a green pathway and a nice area to walk when there's no storm and floodings. And then when the floodings or storms come, that will catch the water before and withstand and make sure that the city is safe much, much longer.
That seems to be a very widely used solution now of building in these buffer zones, and whether it's wetlands or parklands or something, but where there's not critical infrastructure or homes and so on right by the waterfront.
Exactly. And I think that's something we all gain, talking about many of the responsibilities and areas that we have as a company, is to make sure that we do not maybe just focus on one part of the solution, that we make a rather large solution for the municipalities and cities that we're working in. Also creating areas for example, biodiversity and well-being for the people.
It's so nice walking in a nice green space along the riverside, isn't it? Now, one area that was very badly hit by flooding a few years ago was New Orleans in the south of the US. I believe we've done some innovative work there on the University Medical Center. Could you talk us through some of the solutions that we've used there?
Actually, that was a really, really interesting project. Unfortunately, sad circumstances forced us to start thinking differently when we built key functional buildings in a city, like a hospital, because we know that there will be and continue to be severe floodings of that area. So when constructing a hospital, we started to think a bit differently. So usually you put all the installations and maintenance things in the basement of a hospital. Also often the emergency rooms are also quite far down into hospitals. So what we did here was that we just put that the other way around. So we've got installations and the things that is needed to make sure that the hospital can run, even when there is a storm, is now on higher levels, not on basement levels, so that there can be floodings and the hospital will still be working. Another thing was that we built windows that could actually open like gates on higher levels. So when there was a flooding, you could actually transport patients into the hospitals with boats, so that the hospital was really functioning well when storms came later on. And that was a great winning for the city and the hospital, of course, and us. That's something we're really proud of.
But I mean, those sorts of solutions, are they specific to New Orleans, or can they be replicated in other hospitals in other regions?
They can, of course, be replicated. It's not really a very strange solutions or hard to implement. It's just to think about it beforehand. So I think that's something that we gladly would share with as many as possible.
And you mentioned that in some areas we're actually even building floodgates into the basements of buildings to cope with flooding.
Yeah. So, for example, in Boston Seaport, it's an area where we know there will be floodings in the future. We have constructed the buildings in a way where there are floodgates in the basements that allow for the water to actually flow freely through the basements, to not put too much constraint on the construction, and also allow for water to go both ways, in and out.
One thing that we mentioned that I was going to surprise you with is a little bit of a discussion on other forms of resilience. Resilience is usually described as adaptation, which is what we've been talking about a lot here, but also mitigation, that we're trying to reduce the impact that we're having on the climate. What sort of work does Skanska do in regards to mitigating climate impact?
We are doing so much all over our different markets, but to try to summarize, we have three key areas that we see that we can work with and have large gains in reduction of our climate effects. And those are, for example, to design efficiently, to make sure that we are efficient with how we build and what we build. Then we focus, of course, on materials. What kind of materials? Can we use different materials at different areas? How do we optimize the amount of materials that we are using? And of course, then, what kind of materials? And last but not least, we focus quite a lot of energy. So what kind of energy are we using where? And how do we, of course, minimize the amount of energy used, both during our operations, but also in the buildings and the projects when they are in operation? Mm.
And all those three areas can help reduce carbon emissions, which in turn can help hopefully reduce the effects of climate change.
Exactly. Those three are our most material areas to reduce.
Anna Åkesson, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much, John, for having me. I think this was a really fun experience. Thank you, John.
With increasing urbanization, major cities around the world are particularly vulnerable to floods and extreme weather. Mumbai, New York, New Orleans, Guangzhou, just to mention a few, are among the top 20 most vulnerable cities for flooding. C40 is a global network of nearly 100 mayors of the world's leading cities who are united in action to tackle the climate crisis. The mayors are committed to using an inclusive, science-based and collaborative approach to cut their share of emissions in half by 2030, help the world limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and build healthy, equitable and resilient communities. Pedro Ribeiro is the head of C40's water program and is based in Rio de Janeiro. Welcome to the podcast, Pedro.
Thanks so much, John. I'm really happy to be here to talk about a very important topic. As I said, I'm the head of the water program in C40. The C40 organization is a non-profitable organization that only works with cities, and we believe mayors are the ones that can lead the society to face climate change, to decrease emissions and to adapt to the impacts that are already happening. So I'm more than happy to be here to talk about flooding and looking forward to it.
So if we can start by getting an overall description of what sort of challenges the member cities in C40 are facing when it comes to flooding and flooding threats.
All the cities in C40, most of them are really, really huge cities. They were built without considering so much of their water bodies. It's well known that the cities, when they grow, we kind of say that we put our backs to the rivers. Why I'm doing that? We canalize the rivers, and for that reason, we make a lot of impermeability, of course, to build houses, to build our cities. But because we didn't consider the natural environment that were there before we build the city, these water bodies started to come back to life when the rain comes. In the beginning, if the city was small, it was not huge impacts. We were always able to push the water away, push the water down the watershed, and not having so much impact. But of course, throughout the years, the city started to grow, and this water started to come back every time that we have a big rain. And on top of that, most of our rivers inside cities have a lot of contamination, sometimes with industry contaminations because they're in the same watershed of the city, sometimes with sewage, and sometimes even with both of them. And every time we have a big rain, these rivers come back alive and impact the city. And this can impact the transportation, it can impact hospitals, and can even kill lives, as you have seen in some of the cities. We saw in south of Spain, we saw in south of Brazil as well recently. And now we are facing a challenge to how we can reincorporate this natural environment in the city to decrease the impacts that were created by the city developed without understanding the natural environment.
Oh, I think it's a fascinating insight that, of course, we build cities by water bodies, by lakes and by rivers or by seas, because that makes them so convenient. But then we forget that that water is there and that it can create problems. What are the key topics that you have? I mean, the flooding network. Can you talk a little bit about what your network is actually doing and what topics you're discussing there?
Yes. So 40 cities... In C40, we really believe that cities sharing knowledge and learning with each other that they have done wrong in the past or they have done well, it's a very powerful way to move forward and improve the resilience of the city to impacts of flooding. At this point, so there's so many different solutions that need to be done. The first one, I always say that it's about early warning systems and first response to the flooding events. We need to understand that because we already built huge cities and with the climate changing, bringing heavy rain and downpour coming in the future, we will have flooding events in cities. We're going to adapt to that, but there's always a residual risk that will come. We need also to start to communicate that. But to face this first big impact to save lives today, we need to start by mapping the most risky areas of the city, especially where for Global South cities, we have vulnerable communities that can really lose lives during the event, and prepare shelters and alarms that throughout the forecast system will let the community know that the event is coming. We should protect these people during that event. That's the first strategy that cities are doing in C40 cities. We have very good examples in Rio de Janeiro with the early warning systems where they involve the local communities on it. We have good examples coming from Houston as well, where they have very clear forecasts, especially during the hurricane season. Kansas City from Philippines is another city that have done what we call community-based early warning systems, where they involve the communities to build the system itself so they can do their alarms.
Oh, really interesting. I've heard that Copenhagen has some innovative solutions when it comes to flooding. Could you tell us more about that, Pedro?
Yes. Copenhagen has very good examples of using the squares, the open areas of the city, that during the rain, no one will be there. These squares fill up with the water and protect the rest of the areas of the city, avoiding them to do the flooding. For these solutions, they call these surface solutions. So it doesn't mean that we need to put in the pipes and the drainage system. We, of course, do together with the surface ones. It's a combination of both ways. And I think a very important one as well is start to be the urban planning piece of the cities. So, for example, in Philadelphia, they have done a very clear map on where are the most risky areas for flooding. If you are building a new house in these areas, you need to consider how you can avoid your house to be impacted, but also how you can avoid so the houses below you will be impacted. So every new building, they need to talk to the developers, need to talk with the city hall, and they together agree with the right terms to build that in a way that it's resilient for everyone. So I think more and more with these two, three different strategies, we working together, we'll be able to face climate change, but understand that the flooding will always exist, especially because the more impactful ones. We just need to make sure that the big rains will not create the impacts, the big impacts that we are seeing now.
You gave us some good examples there. We're having to work in both the short term and the long term here. I mean, obviously, the early warnings are the short term. There's a real risk to life and property coming now. How far ahead do we need to plan? I mean, we're in flood planning. I've often heard people talk about 100-year floods and so on and so forth. But are we having to, what used to be a 100-year flood is now going to be happening every 10 years? How are we looking at the horizon?
That's a really good point. Really good question, John. First, for those that doesn't know, the 100-year recurrence event is a statistic calculation that a type of rain would happen one time every 100 years. And that's how cities plan the drainage. A lot of cities in the network make these questions where we call taking decisions under deep uncertainty. Because how can you plan the city if every 5 years or every 2-3 years that you redo the modeling of the climate change, the event that used to be 100 is going to start to happen 70 years or 50 years. So that's what I've seen cities doing. It's more the calculation of the cost benefits of these different types of rain. So you don't determine exactly the events that you're going to plan. You start to calculate what type of events you're going to have more impacts on people's life, on the transportation, on health. So all the what we call critical infrastructure of the city, so the infrastructure that should be running during a critical event, and they calculate, okay, which type of rain is going to cause more impact on there, and we're going to prepare for that. We need to understand that we're not going to be able to adapt to all types of events because we will have flooding impacts happening in the city. But we need to understand what is the acceptable flooding impacts that we can live with. The first thing is, of course, as I said, we cannot lose lives. So we need to make sure that people are in the safe areas. And we need to make sure that we're going to decrease the impacts that will be flooded by these events. And we wait for the event to pass and we'll go back to the city. Why is it important to communicate that? Because it's very difficult to a mayor to say, look, we're going to close the city because there is a huge event coming and we're going to have to stop for one day to make this pass. Especially because sometimes this event we can forecast that and it can change because climate, sometimes we forecast for an event, it didn't happen. There's a very interesting case here in Rio in 2000 and 2010, if I'm not mistaken, the mayor announced a big rain would come. He closed the city. It was really good. Mayor Pais in the time, I think it was the right decision. But because of the mountains, the rain stopped in the mountains and go to the sea and didn't drop in the city. Not even one drop. And it was a lot of backlash coming from him, like, oh, you did that, nothing happened. But honestly, he was right, because the prediction was very likely would be a big rain inside the city, and he needs to be prepared for that.
The real true value of C40 is the way that your cities are able to share information and learnings between the cities. You've touched on some of it and some of the examples that you've had there. But can you talk a little bit more about how you share, how the different cities share the knowledge between them?
Yes. I mean, that's really the value, the primary value. We have many others that we build with cities. We create this very safe environment for the city delegates that work in the municipality to share the challenges. For example, one very classic challenge from cities is that the governments still work in silos and they have different departments that sometimes have different political agendas as well. And it's not easy when you have the environmental department wanting to do something, the civil engineering, drainage department wanted to do a different things, and you need to both of them to work together to do it. So I think why we show other cities have done that very well, and this benefit both different departments. They see the value, and we start to break these barriers by comparing and learning from how other cities have done in the past. And I'm sitting these two because this is the most classic ones when we're talking about flooding ones, the flooding challenge. And I can give you an interesting example that's happening now. 2022, we did a training on sustainable urban drainage systems. And we did a full training in the city of Salvador in Brazil with more than 15 departments of the city, coming the civil defense and from the urban planning, from the drainage department, from the environmental one, and so on. And we invited at the time Rio de Janeiro and Curitiba, which are two other cities there in C40 from Brazil. And now, this year, we are seeing Curitiba doing a new project. They're just starting, but they are at this moment in the planning phase, planning to do a riverine restoration project, a huge one in the Belém River. It's a big river inside the city. And all the discussion methodology they are using were discussed in Salvador in the first one. So they're replicating, improving, and tailoring that methodology in Curitiba now, after they learned in 2022, to build this more sustainable environment. So that's really powerful. So for you have many cases on cities learning from each other in order to implement the next steps there. Because I think the sharing knowledge is the beginning. Then we need other partners to participate.
How important is it that we all work together?
I think it's the only way, honestly. If we work separately, we're not going to be able to achieve that. We really need everyone to understand that. And you still, when you see one of these sectors, if it's a new government that doesn't believe in climate change, or if it is companies that don't understand the importance to include sustainability and resilience in their business plan, then we are still creating more impacts than preparing for adapting to the needs, the scenario of climate change that we are facing right now.
Pedro, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate you making the time for us.
Thanks so much, John. It was a pleasure to talk to you all.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you. Bye.
We live in a world where flooding is unfortunately becoming more frequent and more intensive, whether it's due to rainfall, snow melt, storm surge, or sea level rise. And communities, especially cities, are on the front line. Today we heard how communities are adapting to protect themselves. Some are using urban planning, creating buffer areas along watercourses. Some are raising the height of waterfront surfaces, and others are using more mechanical solutions such as floodgates. And through organizations like C40, they're sharing knowledge and best practice as they join forces to combat the effects of climate change. This is our last episode for 2024. Thank you for subscribing and listening, and for your feedback and comments. You can always let us know what you think by mailing to podcast@skatska.com. We'll be back in the new year, If you want to catch up on previous episodes, please visit foresight.skanska.com. But for now, happy holidays. I'm John Ambrose, and you've been listening to Shaping Sustainable Places.